So tell me a little bit about how you decided to adopt from China. What was that process and decision-making like?
We were trying to have a child and went through a lot of processes on that, a lot of issues with fertility and basically starting late, and kind of came to the point where we decided we couldn't have a kid or couldn't spend the extra money that you would need to, and we started looking towards adoption. Kaylin was looking at all of the different avenues, different places, different countries, and I had a lot of friends from China. The gentleman that was teaching us calligraphy was a friend of our family, and I've had lots of other friends in college and elementary school that were Chinese, so the Chinese culture was something that I already knew and was familiar with a lot of people here. And so when Kaylin brought that up, that was pretty much my choice for where we would want to go.
And how did it all go when you went to China? How long were you in China? And what was all that like for you? Had you ever been there before?
I had never been. Go ahead.
I've been to China before. I worked on a corporate report for the Coca-Cola Corporation, where we went to every country in the world that sells Coca-Cola. And so it was a four-month-long job.
But you were only there like a couple of days, right?
I was in China 10 days.
So your trip, did you spend time in Beijing first? Did they work any of that in?
You're going to have to help me remember this too, because
We went there with the plan on spending like a week before we met up with our adoption group. Our family here in town, the Youngs, that we went with, we coupled up with them. And we got in with a tour group, I think recommended through CCAI, to get us a package tour. And so with as many people as we had, we got to have our own little bus. And we got to go to all of the major places to see all the stuff just around in Beijing.
So we did our do in Beijing for several days. God, it's all a blur now.
Once we met up with our group, we went right to our province. And it was like, essentially it was like shock because we'd done all of our touring, and then
they took us a little bit in Hong Kong, right?
A little bit, yeah. We saw Hong Kong, but once we did that, it was like boom, right to our province, and it was literally within like maybe like 6 hours of being there. They're like, okay, guess what? In 2 hours, you got your kid, and so it was kind of like, whoa, you know, it was like getting married. It was like all of a sudden you planned for this and you knew it was coming, but man, like when it came, it was just like you were like getting ready to jump off that cliff. And so it was literally, we went into a room where they were taking down an Amway convention. And so we're in there having this like most poignant moment in your life that you could have next to giving birth on your own. And they're like, okay, here, boom, here's your kid. Okay, here's your kid. In the background, they're clanging chairs and pulling down banners. And I'm like, well, this is efficiency. That's what China's about, you know? But yeah, it wasn't like this like grand like thing, but it was more grand internally. You know, it was like we had it, and it was pretty awesome experience. We were one of the last ones to get our kid, and so it was like
everybody get handed their kids.
And we saw all these emotional breakdowns and all of these powerful moments. You know, most of it with the kids, you know, being totally freaked out and rejecting. And I can just remember I'm sitting there going, okay, well, you know, every creature likes to eat. So I pulled out the Cheerios, you know, and said, okay, well, maybe she'll like me if I give her some food. And it was pretty powerful. Then, you know, then they say, all right, go back to your room. You got an hour, hang with them, and then come out and we're going to have a group meeting. So it was just like, it was like a rapid marriage kind of Vegas style almost, you know, you're like, okay, boom, here's your kid, all right. Now we got it. Okay, you like it, right? You know, and you're like, yeah. But like her, like I like it, meaning the experience. Okay. Everything was just powerfully emotional at that point. But when we got Greta, it was what we all came there for. So that was the good part about it.
Well, and I see when you're talking about this, you're both tearing up. So it's still a very powerful memory.
Well, here's the thing is that like through my photography, I've gotten to experience a lot of things. And I worked on a book called A Day in the Life of America. And we started that day at Parkland Hospital photographing the first birth of that morning. And so I knew what it was like, even though it wasn't my kid. I was there with this lady having her kid, and I was taking pictures as close as you could be. And I got to see that whole experience. And so for me, it was like that was my birth. you know, that I got to experience, even though I got a 10-month-old, it was still like seeing that kid just come right out. You're like, wow, okay, now it's real. You know, now I'm really a parent. But what I learned later was that you're not really a parent until you get barfed on. That's your baptism as a parent. And so we all eventually got it, but Kaylin got the most.
I got the most barf.
How long did it take to get barfed on?
We were on that tour.
We were at some temple.
We were at some temple that we had to climb up these wooden stairs going up to the top. And she barfed down my cleavage, and it was like I had her in one of those baby wrap things facing in, and she barfed down my cleavage. But we were on this tour, and so I just finished the tour like smelling like barf the whole day.
Yeah, and you got your picture taken with like the
dancers. The dancing ladies, and then we went to lunch.
Good thing they can't smell it.
Did you feel like a real mom then?
Yeah, I think that was it.
That's when you know it. But for a while, like Greta only wanted to hang out with Kaylin, and that first like couple days, and I was just like, you know, you're my daughter, and so I took over some of the feeding of her. It's like, look, you know, I want you to, you're gonna like me here.
I needed to hand off to him. It was a lot.
Yeah, and so we got along, and I can remember feeling like a family one day when I was sitting there in the hotel room, and both Greta and I are eating Cheerios and we're watching Japanese sumo wrestling, you know, on TV. Because I'm thinking like, okay, there's only like two or three channels on and there's nothing kid related. It's not like here with PBS, you know, where you can turn on 24-hour kid shows. So I'm like, well, this is what I like to do at home. So maybe that's what she did at some point, you know, and she'd like recognize. And yeah, we just sat around and watched, you know, Japanese sumo.
It was a time in China, I think.
So what was it like for you as a dad? Because in our group, it was similar, and Caroline was not interested in dad or my stepson, who's 13, her brother, who came with us. And he was so excited. But she was like, it took a while for almost all of the girls, except for one in our group of 11 families, to warm to the dad. Did anyone help you understand that, why that was happening? Anyone in your group, did you have any theories about why that might have been happening?
What I had heard was that in the Chinese adoption environment, men played a very small role. And usually they were like the administrators, the one who just sat and were concerned with the expenses and how things were going. So, I mean, I kind of knew there weren't many men around. And so from that point of view, I was like trying to like, okay, well, then this means I'm actually more special because I'm more rare. So it helped out a lot with me and bonding with Greta, you know, later on down the road, because I did a lot of things. After we got Greta, Kaylin was working a lot. So I would take Greta with me to go out and to work on my dad's farm. I would take her out in my pickup truck and just bring her along just like she would be anywhere in the world, you know, hanging out with her parents while they work. But yeah, so it turned out to be a real positive thing for me because she, you know, I was just one of the few men around in her life. So we had a little preparatory about it. You know, they gave us a lot, the adoption agency gave us a lot of information about what to expect and what to do if things happen. And, you know, so I had a good idea, but still when you experience it, what anyone says to you, it's like minuscule compared to your actual experience when you're really there, you know.
You can't just learn something from what they tell you. You have to really go through it.
Yeah.
It's an experience you have to really understand what it's going to be like. Was it hard for you to relinquish Greta when you were in China to Michael? Was that...
Yes and no. I really wanted them to have a bond. And it was obvious that she wasn't naturally... She was clinging to me. But I also needed a break. You know, that's an intense thing being a grown up, being an older mom, you know, and being handed a 10-month-old. It's like, oh my God. Oh, and she was sick too. She was sick. So there was a lot of breathing and a lot of, you know.
She had a little skin thing going too.
But it was, she had, basically we found out she had, got home and she had bronchitis in both lungs and double ear infections. So she was a sick kid. You know, I pulled the crib up to the bed and listened to her breathe all night, you know, because she was having a hard time. So
Did you have the like supply of medicine that they tell you to go over there with?
We did. We took a big box and we started her on antibiotics right away. And I don't know that they were the right antibiotics, honestly, because we came back home and she was really sick. And then they started her on a different one.
And then she has to fly with bronchitis. Oh, so that must have been a...
She screamed for the 20 hours. She screamed the whole time.
She screamed and kicked the entire flight. Mm-hmm. And we were at the back of the airplane. And I can remember having seeing a guy next to us in the other row. He had five seats where no one was sitting. He was stretched out, laying there. And he kept on telling me, like, well, can't you keep your kid quiet? You know, at one point, I just wanted to say, here, maybe you can try to keep her quiet.
You were so sick.
I was sick, too. I didn't get sick until the day before we left, and I got really bad food poisoning. So for me, that last day when you're trying to get all those trinkets that you want to get, and then also, you know, the 18-hour flight that it was a whole experience in itself. But
So that joyous moment of those first few hours.
She had bronchitis and ear infections. He had food poisoning. I was the least sick.
It is. It's an experience that no one can really prepare you for, and it's a fun experience, but it's heavy. You know, it was like camping for me. I mean, I spent a good hour every evening boiling water to clean all the stuff, to then pour all the hot water over everything. And then I'd go make my phone calls to America where it was like 8 a.m. trying to take care of other business. So it was strenuous and stressful, but fun.
So let me ask you about sort of slightly change the subject a bit. I want to ask you what you thought about, to the extent you thought about, the lack of information about their earliest life, their birth families, their biological connection. Did you give that a whole lot of thought at the time that you were deciding to adopt? Have you thought about it since? And what are your feelings about it?
I knew that there was going to be no information. We were one of the only families that they told us that our daughter was left with a red note. And they showed it to us. How long was it? They said we could pick it up in 80 years or something
When Greta is...
They were like, we can relinquish this document in 80 years or something like that.
Something way, way later. Yeah, and only Greta could get it.
I'm not going to be alive then. But we took a picture of it. And it's at the orphanage. You know, when we go back, I bet you they'll give it to us. But I looked up my picture in the phone the other day to show somebody. We don't know anything about if it was actually written by the people that left her, her parents, her grandparents, whoever. We don't know anything about that. But it said when her birthday was, and it said what time of day she was born. And I don't think much more than that.
And they call it a red note?
It's written on that red rites paper. I pulled it up the other day.
Yeah, I think it's their finding note. And, you know, since we were like one of the only ones that got one, it was kind of like shocking.
I think there were two in our group. Yeah. Of a 14, there were two people that had one.
The other question was this really truthful? Was this the one description I had heard was that they would have this thing available to comfort us, you know, and whether it was truthful or not was like the question, you know, but they knew that the white people needed this kind of information.
The person that left our daughter thought about a white person adopting.
Are you saying, Michael, that you question whether the note itself was actually left or if that's something that the system creates because they feel like it's an appeasement to families?
Yes, correct. I mean, I'd later seen the Lisa Ling special about the lost girls in China, and that might have been one of the points put up. I think, did you find it? There's the note, yeah.
It's taken on my old flip phone. It's not going to... But we've had it translated by Mr. Yu.
And what does it say?
It says something like she was born at midnight, and it uses the old Chinese calendar. So it says something like September 26th, but it actually translates to October 24th in America. It's October 24th.
So you do have the assurance, to the extent that anyone has an assurance, that her birthday, as you celebrate it, is accurate.
Yeah.
I believe it is. From what the orphanage people said, they said that the way her belly button looked, and I think that's a telltale sign, you know, how it's scabbed over, how fresh it looks. I think within 24 hours, your belly button looks different than it does you know, or the court or whatever. So I think they have supported also her age. I really do feel like it's truthful.
Does she ask or talk at all about wondering about her birth family or birth parents?
I have heard nothing really from her. I've asked her, you know, if she ever thought about it, and she said no. And so, yeah, I'm not sure where really it sits with Greta. I mean, we've always told her the whole thing pretty much from the start that you were born in China and that we're your parents. But you also have your birth parents, you know, your mother who gave birth to you and your father. And we just know that they couldn't take care of you, so they took you to a place where you would be safe. And that's kind of where it's been left. But yeah, ever since the very beginning, you know, there was no question about letting her know where she was from. And she would oftentimes walk up to the little kids when she was 3 years old on the playground and say, "Hey, I'm from China." You know, it's like, and remember one little boy said, "Yeah, I can tell." So it's like, okay, yeah, duh.
I love when those people come up to you and they look at you and they look at the kid and they go, "Is she adopted?" And I'm like, what? So once I said to a woman, "No." And that like blew her mind. She just didn't have anything to say after that.
They would say to us, "Oh, your son looks cute." I mean, she'd be in full pink with bows and all that because they shaved her head when she was given to us. So she did look like a little androgynous kid.
She always looked like a girl to me.
So it sounds to me like you've had some thinking in the years since, or maybe even then, about the system itself and about the narrative. We've all got a similar narrative. In fact, probably if you took all of our finding documents and lined them up, we essentially have the same version of the stork story, the correct Chinese adoption stork story. How much were you thinking about that during the process? In other words, is this an awareness that you came to after she came home? Or did you have some awareness that, or question about the process while you were in the process? What has your evolution been about that?
Well, yeah, I was told that there might be some information that we're given that was just information that was given that might not be truly applicable. And Kaylin did a research where she paid a group to go and basically have a detective to go and check on it.
We got like a 35-page document, but that document and that whole experience was basically about the life when our daughter was placed in foster care. So when she was found to when we got her, that was that whole situation. It wasn't about like possibly what the birth parents, you know, what their situation was. Is that kind of where you're going?
So it wasn't what it told you about was her experience in foster care, and then she was in the orphanage after foster care, or?
I think she was left at the orphanage gate, and I believe they called it a mantle. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's like a little, it's like almost like a little blanket bassinet. I honestly think that the orphanage left the little bassinets, the little mantles outside, and that I could be making that up because that's just what's in my head, but that then birth parents came and put the kids in those blankets to keep them safe and then waited for the people to come pick them up.
And at what point was she in foster care?
She probably left within days after being found because our orphanage put all the healthy children in foster care and then kept all the special needs with the nannies to and it was a pretty modern facility. When we went to China, you were not allowed to go visit the orphanage, but we chartered a bus and we went outside the orphanage and like stalked them a little bit.
They only let like two people out of the bus, even. It was pretty restrictive, and I was and one
got,
of the only
they,
ones
they got in trouble. No, we weren't allowed out of the bus in Jiangxi, and Kiki, our guide, she got in trouble.
No, I was one of the ones who was out there when she got yelled at. I was taking pictures, and I got a bunch of panoramas. It was a nice Chinese-style situation where they had the older people on one side, and then they had the kids on the other, and they both got to interact, so the old people had something to do.
She was there, and then she was given to foster family, and we actually found out, not from our agency, but from that company that did the investigating. We found out that she had two foster families, and they don't really give a reason why she was switched from one foster family to another. So
after foster care, did she live in the orphanage, or did she live in foster care?
She lived in foster care for most of her time in China. And then like 2 weeks before she came to us, they brought her back to the orphanage.
The readjustment period is what they call it.
Really another level. I really have mixed feelings about that because I think they wanted to separate her from her family that she knew and bring her to somewhere where she could kind of whatever. But I think that kind of traumatized her more to have three crazy experiences, you know, foster family, orphanage, us, in a matter of 3 weeks.
Well, and theoretically four at in the whole yeah. thing because she'd had two
foster families. So it was yeah. five and then so, being dropped off at birth. I mean, it was, you can count them up. It's really kind of a yeah. lot of trauma that went on for a little, it was, for a little being.
It was like she was abandoned five times is what it was really like, I think, emotionally for her. So for us, we were like, okay, now we're going to, you know, take care of you.
Now we're the real. We're the real deal.
Do you see any vestiges of that? Or do you feel like that she's really, whatever that was, is resolved internally with her, and she seems fine?
I think there are residual effects in attachment. I do feel like there is something that we haven't gotten to the bottom of. But I don't think that she thinks we're going to abandon her. You know, I don't think, maybe on a conscious level, you know, we are her family. She loves us, you know. We're the ones. We're the comforting people that she goes to. But I do think there are some, you know, vestigial, you know, attachment sort of, you know, bonding things that we don't really know too much about.
No, yeah, I agree on that. Yeah. I feel like that, yeah, she was probably just still wandering. And so,
no. I just think it's like when they explain to you in therapy, you know, it's like their brain sort of short-circuited in a way that, It's almost like it can't relax sometimes. You know.
Have you been in counseling, or has she been in counseling?
We did some classes that we sort of taught us how to maybe react to her or relate to her better. It was like a 5-week class. And then I found a therapist through that we sort of went to, that she wanted to get us on the same page before we brought Greta in. And then we just kind of fell off. You know, we never got Greta really into it, integrated. So it's something that we're thinking about.
Yeah, it's definitely a wish that we'd like to pursue.
I would like to get something going before the teenage years, because I do feel like there's an aloofness. There's sort of Greta pushing us away in a way that I don't want to let go on for the 13, 14, 15, you know, years that are coming up soon.
And you want to be clear, and am I correct in interpreting this, that you want to be clear that if whatever that is, if it has anything to do with this sort of early bonding questions, that you maybe can address and start to resolve them before adolescence?
Yeah, yeah. Some, whatever we can do, you know, to make it easier for her.
How important is her friendship with her friend from Jiangxi province? Tell me your name again.
It's Camille Young, and it's extremely important. They are probably closer than any person on the planet. Her mother and I have become really close, and she said that Camille doesn't act silly and goofy and crazy the way she does. She doesn't act it with anybody else other than Greta. You know, they just have an underlying bond that's really, it's special to the girls. I think.
Yeah.
I think it's a primary friendship that will last.
It's almost like, I mean, one time I mentioned, Greta was asking me, she said, you know, I want a sister. And I said, well, you kind of have one, you know, Camille, because y'all are both the same age and we don't know you. You could have been sisters. We don't know. And so she kind of takes it as that, you know, this is her first friend.
They were in the orphanage together. We got pictures together. We got pictures of them in a group of kids together. We got a lineup of kids, you know, all of them in the same group.
Does she have other, aside from Camille, is there much in her school? And there, how many, is she the only Chinese kid? Is she one of very few Chinese kids? How?
It ranges. There's been other Chinese kids, but
I don't know if they're there now, but yeah, there might be one.
There's several in the younger classes that have come in, but they're not adopted. They're just Chinese or Korean or whatever, but they're from families. In Camille's school, there's quite a few kids of many different ethnicities, a lot of Asians. Because she lives up in Richardson, where it's a big, you know, Chinatown is, so.
And it's a different experience when the kids are, and there are a lot of Chinese national kids in my daughter's school, but it's a whole different ball of wax.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's almost like they straddled the world in between, because they are Chinese, but they are American. I'm it's an interesting thing, but I really think Greta thinks she's white in a way, you know, because we're white and she are Caucasian and she just identifies with that. I think that's kind of an interesting, like, where her mind.
Yeah, but you know? But Greta and I always compete every summer to see who gets the darkest tan, you know. So it's kind of like she goes, well, you know, if you take out your hair, then I'm darker, you know. So it's like, okay, you know, but yet, like, in the, it's funny that we do that as a little silly competition, but, you know, our, like, Chinese national friends are like, oh, no, you let her skin get too dark, you know, put sunscreen on. We're like, okay, well, we're American where we like to be dark, you know, so it's different.
Our mail lady was Chinese, the lady that delivers the mail, and she is always telling me to cover Greta up. And she's like, oh, you shouldn't go swimming, you know.
Why you let her get so dark, you know? And we're just like, because that's what we do here, you know? And it, yeah.
It's interesting about this because Caroline will say to me occasionally, do I look Chinese? And she's genuinely puzzled. I realize that. And I said, yeah, you look Chinese because you are Chinese. Yeah. And she says, I say, why? And I asked her about it when I interviewed her. I said, when you look in the mirror, I actually wonder if there's some kind of like dysgraphia or something that can actually happen in their perception of themselves.
My mother babysits her a lot. My mother said one day, and she might have been like 5 or something, really young, she said, like, when am I going to turn white? Or when am I going to, you know? And I just thought, that's just like an amazing, like, brain. I don't know how to even talk about it. It's just, it was like, it was really amazing.
How old was she when she asked that?
It might have been 4 or 5. I mean, it was, that's 5, maybe 6. I don't know. It's not written recently.
So when you hear that, do you ever ask yourself, did we do a good thing or did we do a bad thing?
I constantly am doing that, tossing it back and forth. Overall, yes, we did a great thing because I don't believe that the kids in the orphanage, you know, aging out of the system, are going to have any kind of life, you know? So if, you know, if we didn't get her and somebody else didn't get her, then I really don't think that that life is much of a positive thing at all. But is it better that she stayed in her country and had the rich experience of being Chinese in China? You know, yes. I mean, that would be awesome too. It's just, I keep tossing it back and I don't think there's a win-win situation, you know?
How about you, Michael? Do you ever think, did I do a good thing or did I do a bad thing?
Well, all of my experiences in China have shown me like what the country was like for the people who were providing the kids, you know, that were needed to be adopted. Showed me that they were living very basic, you know, living standards. And so I knew that, I don't want to be misunderstood, but I knew that I could provide a life where my daughter would be considered to be like a princess, you know, versus where she would be in China. But in either case, we'd both try to be good parents, whether it was me or her birth parents. It would just be a whole different world. So yeah, I felt like, you know, I'd be doing something good. But yeah, you're definitely, it's always a concern in the back of your mind about what am I doing for the brain here, you know. My father taught me a lot about what he knew, and so I'm trying to teach my daughter a lot about what I know. And so in some aspects, she has more richer experiences. Like when we got Greta, I became unemployed. And so I spent a lot of time with my daughter, carrying her around and doing stuff with her while Kaylin was off working. And so I would go around and I'd point to things and say what it was. And then I'd say, Greta, what is that? And so she learned a lot of words very early on. And so I don't know if she spoke English earlier or spoke earlier, but she knew a lot more words than the other kids in her class in like preschool. So I felt like that was where I was providing for her.
She tried to talk when she was 3. Yeah. I don't think they ever heard her voice because she was like.
So it sounds like most things in life, there's complexity. Uh-huh. But essentially, you're a family.
Right. We came to be a family. Through choice, through, you know, actively, you know, seeking it out. And we chose the way we became a family. But it's always like, were the kids stolen? Were, you know, that was that whole thing, you know. We just don't know. I don't think we'll ever know. I would not be opposed to doing DNA. I would not be opposed to doing anything to seek out. I do think that having that later rather than sooner, because if we did, if you did find a match for the family in China, then, you know, a 9-year-old brain trying to process that is a little, that's a little heavy for anybody at any age, but I think that's a little young.
But so if she wanted to later, that would be something you'd support.
Oh yeah. I'm not adopted. I don't, you know, I've known people that are adopted. I've known people adopted that have found their family and maintain a friendship with them, you know, and so, you know, I can see that as only a positive.
Yeah, we definitely hope to be able to go back here. We're trying to plan for the what do you call it, the reunification visit, the heritage tour. And I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't think that she'll really care about that, but it could pop up. So that's what we're kind of worried about.
Anything you'd like to say to people who don't know anything about this? Well, you think they need to know?
It's an incredible experience. It's an experience that you can get a lot of information about, but when you really, really experience it, it's like it just seems so much bigger than what you were prepared for. I mean, I was really prepared for it. I read a little bit of stuff about it, and she read a little, and I read a lot.
No.
But I got a lot of the information from our agency, and they had a good list about what ifs, and this might happen, or that might happen, or you could be approached when you're there with your kid by someone who actually knew them, or you could be approached by the parent, and they told us, you know, what we should try to do in those situations. But yeah, being there, it's just, it's an experience that no preparation can really truly prepare you for what it's really like.